This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne, and you are at the place where we talk about local stuff here in the Willamette Valley.
Pretty much anything,
Just about everything. Some feel-good stuff, some nonprofits, some entrepreneurship, some taxation, things happening at the Capitol, things that affect your quality of life and how we live here in the Mid-Valley and Salem and Kaiser, Marion, Polk County, and things that affect your wallet as well. Actually, there's no in-studio guest today, although we have a couple callers coming in with a couple good topics, and so we get to catch up on a little bit of the news.
All right. I look forward to it.
Some of the things that people need to be aware of, a lot of people are not reading the daily newspaper anymore, believe it or not. We get to this network feed sometimes, if they watch the news at all, or they've avoided it because it's depressing. But it's a little while, actually, this is somewhat old news, but we talked about the paper plant going into Dallas.
Right, Dallas, Oregon.
And that was about a month ago and had to go through a process of approval. It got its approval from the city.
Nice.
So they had about 15 comments, as I recall, that were issued by citizens on the process. A lot of them had misconceptions in terms of what the plant was going to do. And
right. They didn't want that pulp smell.
Yeah, which isn't going to happen. So because they're not creating the pulp there. Anyway, about 15 citizen comments. It was approved and administratively, and it is a 15-day appeal period. But let's go back to what it is. It's over $300 million of improvements in Polk County, and that's all taxable. So it's going to be a huge increase to the general fund for sorely needed for Polk County that has to pass levies to have law enforcement people patrolling the roads, right? And, of course, it's in the city of Dallas, so for Dallas as well. So good news for the West Valley, and I hope that it does not get appealed, that land use decision, and they get to move forward. That is an incredible, incredible investment. It's going to bring jobs as well, and maybe then so is people who are moving into all those new houses we heard about in Dallas, can live in Dallas and work in Dallas anyway.
New streets, new sidewalks, new lighting, new houses.
So many things. And we talk about
apartments, new stores.
Trying to provide the aquatic center to citizens and parks for citizens and all those things you're talking about in infrastructure. So it goes a long way, and it's nice to have another industry in the valley and that kind of boon for Dallas and Polk County. Also, let's talk about that $2 billion in taxes a little bit.
Yeah.
So there's an article.
Do we have to?
Yeah. Let's credit the Oregon Business Plan. They have a paper out on it, Business Plan. And even though their business, it's the Oregon Business Plan, and their business groups, that's a consortium behind the Oregon Business Plan, is not necessarily the most conservative group, certainly not the most conservative business group in the state. But anyway, they issued a paper out saying this $2 billion. Now, already we're seeing, double-digit increases in the amount of money flowing in to the state, into the state coffers.
Right.
So already there's so much more money, and they seem to still always have a shortfall, which, I don't know.
How is that possible?
Don't you, after a while, just goes one ear out the other, you got a shortfall. It doesn't matter how much money we give them. We could just drop them $3 trillion, and there'd be a shortfall. Somehow
they just can't spend enough of our money.
So, but the governor wants $2 billion of new revenue per biennium.
And how is she going to get that?
New taxes.
What,
well, one of the major proposals is the gross receipts tax, which we talked about.
Oh, yeah.
Taxing big companies. And they always want to make you feel, they want to make the voter feel like we're going to tax Walmart. They're not paying their fair share.
Yeah, right.
We're going to tax Exxon Mobil. They're not paying their fair share. They're going to pick on somebody as a headquarters out of town and this big conglomerate behemoth. And we're just going to take their money and nobody in Oregon's going to be hurt.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Not only will those big companies probably either move out of Oregon or just simply pass on the tax to you.
Yeah, of course they're going to pass on a gross receipts tax.
So everything is going to cost more.
cost of the product that we're
buying.
That's
why gas prices go up.
So here's the crux of the piece. That $2 billion per biennium will not keep up with what we know the PERS cost increases will be over the period of time.
What?
That it doesn't even do that. So again, talking to the public, they're going to want to tell you that it is for the classroom, for the human services, for the things that, you know, healthcare, for education, da, da, da.
Mm-hmm.
But we know you can get another $2 billion. The state can get another $2 billion from the taxpayer, and it's still not keeping up with how the PERS unfunded liability is going to grow over the period of time.
I thought they fixed that. No?
Well, they've done the fixes that the court will permit them to do.
Oh, okay. So then no matter how much money we throw at the PERS, it's still not going to backfill it enough for our liability of the state, right?
It's, right.
Yeah, wow.
Right. Can you imagine if she doesn't get her $2 billion? I mean, it's hard to imagine with a Democrat Party supermajority that any revenue that they won't get. But maybe they'll take it out of the cap and trade revenue when they start taxing people for having natural gas and taxing people for diesel.
No, don't get me started.
We had a farmer on, right? Yeah. We had a farmer on this week, last week, this week, talking about, hey, you know, that's a big increase in our diesel costs, and that goes into
their
food costs.
Their margin of profit is not very big. I mean, it can make or break them. On gas taxes and diesel taxes and
the period,
all that kind of.
The period I'm talking about in the paper, and again, I want to credit the Oregon Business Plan for writing this up and showing a chart. This is where it is.
Right.
It's over the next 10 years, about to 2031.
Okay.
So 10, 12 years. Over that period of time, let's see if we get this number right. PERS, the need to backfill PERS will grow by 117%. Of the actual new taxes that she's asking to get. So it's going to grow even more than this $2 billion per biennium.
That's every 2 years, increase. Extra $2 billion she wants.
Yeah. And it still doesn't even...
Isn't that called bankruptcy?
We're going to go backwards. We're already at, what, $26 billion or something?
Yeah,
like
it's
that?
Called
PERS,
bankruptcy.
Unfunded liability.
How can the states continue that?
So... You know, the Brent solution.
Okay. Give me the Brent solution.
We need more industry in Oregon that does great family wage jobs and creates income tax revenue for the state. It's
good
always
idea.
It's always
but,
about, there's two things that's, what but?
The state will tax them more because they're big business. They're evil. They're big business. Yeah. Unlike the state, big business.
Well,
and they will not come into Oregon.
Yeah. That's the worst thing is that, it won't. They won't allow it to be launched because if I
too much red tape
were
too.
In charge, folks, yeah. Mm-hmm. And here we're announcing Brent's run for governor. there are two things that cycle in my brain constantly that are renewable, inexhaustible.
Okay,
and that's the ocean and the timber.
Right,
100% renewable, inexhaustible. We could have industry and export worldwide if we utilized our natural resources. And we can even still be a green, sustainable practicing state. And you could create these enormous industries. And then, hey, people will make money. You get to tax it and more money comes in.
Right.
Why don't we look for more revenue by allowing people to make more money? That's the two pieces that they miss. Spending cuts, because I hear you, listener. You are screaming at your radio right now. They're spending too much. They spend too much. And it is true.
It is true.
So spending efficiencies, spend less, right?
They spend too much on the wrong things.
Stop, especially the Democrat Party, you can pick on it. Stop knocking down every initiative to create more economic activity that you can tax.
Right.
Then you get to tax it and it goes to money for your healthcare designs and your educational goals and so on and so forth. So agricultural in Eastern Oregon, Northeastern Oregon, by using water out of the Columbia, just like the state of Washington does.
Right.
But we can't do it. Sustainable forestry on state lands. So
which
that we
needs
just doesn't
be done.
Burn down.
Right.
I mean.
That's how you maintain it.
Yeah. Talk about the liberal conundrum there. No, we can't manage it. We can't manage it. Then we burn down or at least all that carbon.
Got to protect the owl, and then it still all burns down and kills the owl. So
And all the little bunnies.
And so, all the bunnies. And the deer.
That's the
hunters.
Two pieces. They just think in terms of tax rates and new tax, different areas to tax, right? Ugh. New tax plans and tax rates is the only way to raise revenue. No, it's not. Mm. Raise the average household income in Oregon. How come that can't be the number one goal?
How about bringing new businesses, like you say?
Raise the average household income. Fewer people are going to need services. Your human services budget will go down.
You can utilize so much sense.
Education. And let's do that. And let's create an environment where we can launch incredible sized industries that are sustainable and inexhaustible. It could be branded Oregon. Mm-hmm. You know how much seafood we could grow in aquaculture, marine agriculture, and ship to the Pacific Rim?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to do a whole show on that. Have to do a whole show on that. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back, we're going to talk about the lobby. We talked about this just briefly with the mayor just yesterday because he is a former lobbyist. But some of the numbers about the lobby and who's putting money in our legislators' pockets. Who's doing that? It won't be a huge surprise. Stick with us. You're listening to Brent and Dave on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly sponsored by Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we're going to talk about the lobby. We were teasing that before the break, and
not our office lobby, but the lobby at the Capitol.
The lobby as an institution at the Capitol. And thanks to our friends at Salem, the Salem Reporter, who is our website partners here at KYKN. It's not why I picked him; just a great article, and of course, great investigative journalism. So, in the last 10 years, lobbyists are spending about $1 million more each year on the lobby. More than $1 million more each year. It's grown by $12 million in 10 years. So how much money is getting spent from interest groups at the legislature to influence? So that's a sign. Second, the point of the article is that legislators are coming and going. We have this so-called citizen legislature, despite people being there for a long time sometimes. But the lobby has more institutional memory than the legislators. And even the staff, which a lot of times, especially in Washington, D.C., you have people, you know, policy people have been there around there forever, and they know more, and they have a lot of influence on policy because the legislator doesn't have the institutional knowledge or the history. You know, has the history in Salem? The lobbyists. So
explain to me again, I'm a little confused, how the lobby works.
Well, you have to be registered to be a lobbyist. But so let's say you're going to be a lobbyist.
Okay.
You're going to be a lobbyist for Gun Owners of Oregon. Right?
Okay.
They come to you and they hire you for your skill because you have relationships and knowledge in the Capitol. And they will pay you to go to the Capitol and talk about the bills that are important to you and important to the Gun Owners of Oregon.
To the
legislators.
Okay.
And their staff, sometimes the staff. So, and there's a lot of lobbying firms, and some of them have one or two huge clients, and some of them have several small. And so there's more registered lobbyists than there are the hardcore, the people like the mayor was talking about, the 200 or 300, couple hundred who everybody knows each other that's been around the Capitol for a while, and they have credibility, they have relationships, and then so forth.
So they're paid to be like the people in the ear of the legislators.
Yeah. Either in session or before session, even. And to try, let's say, you know, even the Farm Bureau, right? They have a lobbyist. We were talking to the Farm Bureau on Monday. And they have a lobbyist, and they'll go in and say, hey, this is important to the lobby, and it has to do with water rights. It has to do with chemicals. It has to do with minimum wage. It has to do with work conditions and regulations, whatever the issue is for that group. And then the lobbyist is often in a position of educating the legislator. Because the legislator, we could get elected tomorrow. That doesn't mean I know anything about what's important to the high-tech sector. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything really about forestry, right? So you pick the topic, and so you rely on an industry group to tell you, which is it is a good resource, and it can be, you know, seen as sinister, and it's not always altruistic.
I'm raising my hand because who's the lobbyist for me, the people?
Well,
isn't that supposed to be the legislators?
That's the thing about, yeah, you know, the legislators are supposed to represent you.
Okay, they're supposed to.
And your friend next door that has completely different political
but
policy
sometimes
goals.
I feel like they are not representing me.
I wonder why that is, Jake.
Because there's too many lobbyists in their ear?
Maybe you're not registered the same party that the powers that be are.
Even then, even if either party, sometimes they're just not listening to either side.
Salem's not listening.
No, right? Not the legislators anyway.
So, but to answer your question, a lot of us have lobbyists working on our behalf. We don't even know it, because if you're a member of AARP, well, they have lobbyists.
Oh,
if
sure.
If you're a member of trade, there's certainly a contractor's industry lobbyist.
Mm-hmm. But they're working on a national level.
Not necessarily.
Really?
All right, let's talk the numbers. This is from Salem Reporter.
Okay.
And you'll rapidly see what my concern is, because we've been talking about who drives public policy in Oregon, folks.
Okay.
I know you could all tile in and answer that question. It's the public employee unions. And the question is that a good state of being? All right. Top 10 campaign contributions. In the top four, three of them are public employee unions.
Oof.
Yeah. It starts with Oregon. Yeah.
Move the laptop around so you can read it.
Oregon Public Employees Local 503.
That is a big one.
$9.6 million. That's just from in the 3 years from 2015 to 2018. They're spending $9.6 million. You know, number 10 on the list, it falls all the way down to less than a million.
Oh, wow.
Right? So number two, Oregon Education Association, representing the teachers, right?
Yeah.
Almost $8.5 million. So 9.6, 8.5. And then there's Stand for Oregon. It's right in there at number three. Mm-hmm. I mean, Stand for Children. I beg your pardon. And then AFSCME, AFSCME Council 75. So public employee union at almost $5.5 million.
Wow.
All right. So those three of the top four. Let's give it a little bit of scale, because it falls off after that. You have some trade groups. You've got Nurses Association and the Realtors. You have a healthcare association. Then you go to electrical workers. So you've got union tradesmen, trial lawyers association, and number nine. Okay. Those three represent over 60% of the total spending of those top 10. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So $21 million out of 35 is in public employee unions. That's who contributed to the campaigns. Who do you think our legislators are beholden to?
Right.
That's a problem, folks, when the legislators' agenda is the public employee union's agenda. And what is their agenda? Their agenda is to have more people work for their union, meaning more people working for the government, and better benefits and PERS and all every tax that goes. That's the agenda: taxes, government workers, union benefits, and all those things.
Right.
That's a problem, folks.
There was this big story that came out today, and I'm gonna have to go get it. That was just released today about this, how their membership has dropped off by over 19%. So we might see a change starting next year.
They will have fewer dollars to spend because of the
quite a bit less.
The Supreme Court case that said that you don't have to be a union member.
Yeah, and a lot of them got out.
So I always felt sorry for teachers that
had to be in it.
That were Republicans.
That had to be in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like, they couldn't even speak out really or let their political events be known in the schools because they're afraid of being ostracized. But all right. And there's another list. Another list. Again, Salem Reporter. Thank you, Salem Reporter, for investigatively leadership here. Top 10 spenders on lobbying.
Okay.
These are the people that actually spent money on lobbyists to go
on their behalf,
right? Yeah. So you know what's missing? Public employee unions.
Really?
Why do you think they don't need any lobbyists? Well, because they already bought the legislators.
Yeah.
Right. So on the top 10, you have the Realtors and a Petroleum Association, the Nurses Association. Again, you're talking about trade associations, pharmaceutical research, Oregon Education Association does come in the top 10, and he's there number five. But then it's contractors, school boards, Oregon counties. The city of Portland is high.
What?
How much they spend on lobbyists. City of Portland's right there at number six, the top 10.
See, and then they should be spending that money on other things.
Yeah. And the Oregon Ask Me Council 75, so the public employee union, still over $300,000 in lobbyists. That was 2017. They spent $300,000 on lobbyists. But, that's almost a little over a third of what the realtor spent. Right?
Wow.
All right. So that is an issue. We all have to be aware of who's paying for these people to get elected.
Right.
And what allegiances do they have because of it? And it undue influence. And I'm not, I'm not a big fan of unions in the 21st century. But I'm not a union basher either. But I do have a huge problem with public employee unions having so much influence in public policy in this state.
Yeah, that is a problem.
So, wow.
We're supposed to have the voice. Our vote is supposed to count.
Three out of the top four, givers and campaigns, people.
And public.
Public employees.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Can you believe it? Hey, we're going to have a guest after the break. A great story coming out of Salem, a national championship for a local sports team, high school team at that. And I said national championship. It's not the first time they've done it. Mm. It's got at least a sixth, maybe more. You may have never heard of this team or knew that they competed. And right here in Salem, last weekend, national title won in St. Louis, Missouri. So we're going to have a call in. We're going to talk about that. So stick with us through the break. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers proudly sponsored by Color Tile of Salem.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we're going to spotlight a little bit in the next 10 minutes the kids from Sprague High School that compete in a club sport called racquetball. Most people are not aware that Oregon is a national powerhouse in high school and college racquetball, and that Sprague is a powerhouse in the state of Oregon. And this is all driven by volunteers and coaches that's had a vision and said, hey, let's do this for the kids. And so in many cases, more kids are competing for Sprague in racquetball than mainstream sports. It's probably bigger. Let's ask the boss man. We have on the line here Don Kurzel, one of the coaches. And Don has been volunteering and coaching these kids for a long time, a racquetball player himself. Don, you with us?
You bet.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I was about to say how many kids participate, and I didn't want to be inaccurate, but you had how many girls on that Sprague racquetball team this year?
This year we had 20 girls and 21 boys.
Wow. So 41 participants. That's bigger than the size of probably a volleyball team. It's certainly bigger than the size of a baseball team,
right.
Softball team. That is a lot of kids out competing, and they compete both state and nationally, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So you guys went out and won a national championship, a team championship.
Tell us about that.
Amazing.
We would have to do a whole show on the points and how they calculate it. But basically, it's a team sport. You do individual matches, but with each individual match, you accumulate points for your school, and Sprague came out on top in the nation.
Yeah. It was definitely a team effort. We didn't necessarily have any one individual that scored a ton of points for us. It was everyone chipping away and ultimately scoring enough.
Do you get money from the school or the school district or OSAA or anything?
Nope. No, it is purely a club sport. We do well with our fundraising. We try to keep it focused as far as that's concerned, so we don't waste a lot of time fundraising, but it's all internal.
What kind of kids go out for racquetball and Sprague? Are the kids that are playing other sports or the kids that maybe didn't fit in a different team sport?
The answer is yes. we have all kinds. We have, volleyball players, baseball players. It's considered a winter sport, so we don't have a lot of wrestlers or swimmers, et cetera, basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have a lot of kids that this is their one and only time that they'll ever play a sport. We don't cut. And the way racquetball is organized, both within Oregon and within the nation in high school, every kid has an opportunity to be a success, you know, and they were.
Wow. That's really important. When Don Kurzel says we don't cut, that means if you come out and you want to play racquetball, you get to play. Coaches will coach you. You play to the best of your ability. Sometimes you're slotted into a different skill level and play against other people of that, other schools at that skill level. But everybody
plays. That's
pretty cool. Nobody sits on the bench in racquetball, right?
That's nice.
Absolutely. They slice them, you know, into different groups, 1 through 6. And then within those groups, if you're winning, you stay in the gold bracket, if you will. And if the first one was a little tough, then you fall down to another bracket until you find your people.
A lot of those kids are coming back with individual or some of them play doubles as well. They're coming back with medals for their individual accomplishment.
Wow.
On top of a national, I mean, their team championship, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's interesting because in a lot of ways it feels like an individual sport. You walk on the court, you play singles, it's you. But it is, we really create the culture at Sprague that it's a team sport. And the goal isn't the individual wins, but overall the team win. And as you mentioned at the top of this, we earned our sixth national title this year.
Sixth national title.
Wow.
Well, let's get some kudos. How long has the program been in existence and who founded it?
Founded by Bill Edmiston. His son, Ryan, played racquetball at Sprague, or played racquetball and attended Sprague, and they decided to start up a team there.
20 years ago?
Yeah. You asked that question. It was a great question. I thinking I should have known the answers. It was before my time. I've been around for 12 years about.
Wow.
And so I'd say easily another, you know, 10 years before that, I actually...
How many coaches are there for these kids? You got 41 kids participating.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing to me. By the way, I did just find 1996 is when...
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
He's a computer guy. He's never far from a computer.
Right.
Exactly.
We're talking to Don Kurzel, by the way, a volunteer coach for the National Championship Sprague Olympian racquetball team. Go ahead, Don.
So what's interesting as far as coaching it, I think that's where we were at, it's not like I've coached softball, baseball, where you can throw the kids on the field and kind of run through the drills as a head coach and a couple assistant coaches to point out some things. But in racquetball, we put them in a 20 by 40 room and, you know, two at a time. And so it takes a fleet of coaches to really get the same message across, and everyone's got to be on the same page. And so we have an amazing group of coaches. None of them are parents. Some are past parents, some are former players, former college players, former other high school players, and they're all on the same page. They're all teaching the same thing, and seven of them traveled with us back to Missouri for 5 days of very little sleep and a trophy to show for it.
5 days of racquetball matches. I'm intimately familiar for the listener, and I'm always trying to go full disclosure. My son's one of those kids that started playing as a freshman at Sprague as a cross-training sport.
Wow.
It's great cross-training. I mean, it's great exercise. Footwork, hand-eye coordination, reflexes, an incredible cross-training sport for baseball is what he started. And he kind of left baseball behind in high school and played 4 years for the Beavers. And the Beavers are also a national powerhouse. I think they're running on 11 consecutive years of intercollegiate national champions.
So, wow.
So, all right, Don. And thank you for all you've done those 12 years. I know you don't get paid, right? None of those coaches get paid. And I'm surprised that none of those coaches are parents of kids.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I think it speaks to the program that they've stuck around, whether it's after their kids left or whether it's after they finished their college career and were able to come back and help us coach. But they do believe in the system.
That's a passion for the sport right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
some of these
absolutely in the positiveness that, yeah. that the kids get.
One of these years, someone's going to do a film on racquetball, and it's a movie about racquetball. They're going to figure out how to film it, and it's going to be incredible. It's so fast paced,
yeah,
and the intensity is high. Kudos to Bill and Ryan and yourself. And yeah. what other coaches should we, Stacy? Who else should we be thanking?
Well, we've got a couple Dans. We always have some Dans on coaching staff. So Dan Arnold and Dan Getch. Eric Nelson is one of our coaches. We had some former players, Hayden Bridgman, Frank Burke. Your son came out to Nationals and helped us out. We were short on coaches. My daughter, Maddie Curzel. So just a slew of former players and ongoing. So it's just absolutely amazing. So, you know, OSU's got a great run of 12 years. We have, or 11 years, I think it is. We have a 12-year run where we've been either the national champion or second place runner-up. So
wow.
Program, yeah.
And what are the schools in Oregon have great programs?
You know, there's Beaverton. Barlow is actually up and coming. Southridge. In Salem, we've had teams with Salem Academy, with South, with North, with West. At this point, Sprague is the only team. It's strong in Oregon.
Hey, you know, Coach Don Curzel, I wanted to thank you for taking my kid out of his college classes for four school days.
I did it to my daughter as well, but yes.
Trying to get an engineering degree out of this OSU there, so as long as his grades stay up, then you'll be out of the doghouse. But no, I'm glad he could help because he did. He was part of a couple of those national championship teams at Sprague. And four at Oregon State, and now as a coach. So proud of the kid, and it would not have happened without Bill and Ryan and yourself and everybody who's out there for nothing doing this. You know else who you owe kudos to and thanks is the Courthouse Athletic Club.
Absolutely. You know, very much.
Without the Courthouse Athletic Club, these kids do not have a place to play. So, John Miller, if you're listening, we thank you for having those facilities and maintaining enough courts so they could have as many participants as they have.
Wow, that's incredible.
Very much so.
Yeah, that's a great, great sport.
Nice job, Coach.
All right, so congratulations, Sprague, and the kids, the 21 women and 20 men that got brought a national title and some ribbons back to Salem, Oregon. That is terrific. I hope you had a great time. And are you in it for next year? Did we get you commit?
Well,
we're signing you up for your contract extension?
Yeah, exactly. My wife's negotiating against it, but I think I'm in for a few more years.
Nice.
And also, as I said, I've been familiar with a lot of these kids for 8 or 9 years now, and his daughter as well that helped coach this year. She was a joy to watch play, all of these kids. And, you know, you got kids that just don't look like your typical athlete. You got kids that, you know, they just didn't fit in a group sport, but they thrive here. And it is amazing, like Coach Curzel was talking about, that they're going out there and battling on their own.
Yeah.
But they've got a whole bunch of kids watching through the glass, and there's a whole bunch of hand signals and whoops and hollers. And I think Sprague has some of the best spirit in terms of, hey, we are a unit in a sport where you could say, well, hell, I'm the number one. I'm the number one, and I'm going to get these points. And it's not like that at all.
No.
And the kids rally around, and it's a great sight to behold.
Nice.
Thanks, Don. Anything else we should know? How can everybody help the team?
I was going to throw out one other thing. We had one kid this year that did what your son did, and I think that's the only other one that I know of. And Alec, his junior year, your son Alec, his junior year swept and didn't lose a match. He ended up winning boys two, mixed one, and his boys two doubles.
Wow.
And we had another kid that swept as a sophomore this year.
Wow.
And Rory Lampe. So that was it's a hard thing to do to go there and never walk off a court having lost. So,
wow.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for
doing it. So.
Thank you, Don. I thank you for what you know for the kids. Give congratulations to all the kids from KYKN. And you will be right back. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent the Hart along with Dave Bourne. Thanks for joining us today. We'd like to spotlight great things that are happening in the Valley. Sometimes you don't hear about them in the newspaper. And we're going to thank Don Kurzel and, of course, Bill Edmondson. I know he went to St. Louis to help coach those kids. National championship for Salem sports team. On the phone today, we're going to wrap up with a little talk with Jared and what's going on in Dallas and something that you might be able to help him out with. Jared, you with us?
I'm here, man. I got Landon with me as well, Landon Pegg.
Oh, boy.
All right, Jared and Landon. Well, what is up with you guys?
We have a fundraiser, a team. I just kind of catch you guys up real quick. We have a team going to Mozambique, Africa, and to get there is a pretty healthy expense. And what we're doing is we're actually bringing, per their request, per an orphanage's request in Africa, sustainable and reproducible protein. We're bringing the rabbit husbandry into a country that is kind of new to them. And to get there, to raise money for both product in country and also expenses to get back and forth, we have a massive auction happening on Saturday. It starts at 6:30.
Okay, Saturday, 6:30, massive auction. A lot of things people can come up and buy and bid on. Is it oral auction, silent auction, or a little bit of both?
All right, so at 6:30, the silent auction is going to start. And then probably around 45 minutes later, we'll have the oral auction. It'll be about an hour long. We got a lot of good stuff for both. So
I love it when the oral auction is just an hour.
Right.
Yeah, I've ever been to events where the oral auction is like 90 minutes.
Well, I don't think the auctioneer could talk more than an hour because they're talking pretty darn fast. Hey, where is this happening, guys?
It's at Dallas Alliance Church in Dallas. And this is not the typical church auction. I mean, we have some desserts like you'd expect. But, man, we have like a $7,000 fireplace from Western Interlock. We have blazer tickets, courtside, you know, 11 rows up. I mean, it's just what the community has offered us to auction off just is really blows my mind.
Holy cow. That sounds pretty good. I just changed my plans for Saturday.
Perfect. Yeah.
$7,000 fireplace?
Yeah, and just auction it.
I mean,
yeah, the fireplace and fire pit, both from Western Interlock, come fully installed. So you don't have to worry about hiring a contractor or anything. So that's just two of the really big items we got. Got a leaf blower, a brand new leaf blower from Rick Real Farm Supply. We got a load of gravel from delivered from Knife River. So a whole lot of good stuff.
All right. So this is a faith-based group, right? You're going to Mozambique?
We are, absolutely.
All right. So this is ringing in my head because I'm familiar with the Heifer Project. It's similar in those lines, right? The Heifer, where they would, in a Heifer Project, groups could actually pay for a cow or a goat or some sort of livestock to go and help feed a village or go feed women who might be widows of war.
Mm-hmm.
And they have sustainable protein source and milk and then meat and so on and so forth. So, and you're going to do it with rabbits.
Yeah. What is this group doing?
One more time, sorry.
What is the group doing over in Mozambique?
The rabbits, right? You're bringing rabbits.
No, besides the rabbits.
Oh.
Yeah, this is Landon now. My wife and I raise rabbits here in the Willamette Valley, and that's why we were asked to go, so we could share our knowledge with them. But other things we are going to be doing, we're doing a VBS, of a Vacation Bible School for the kids in the orphanage. So that'll be a new experience for them. And we're also going to be doing some pastoral training.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mozambique as a whole is a... Country-wise, is just riddled with HIV, and so there's a large population of children that are basically forgotten because they're orphanages, they're orphans, and so there's almost a spring of orphanages popping up in that part of the world trying to just love on these kids, and one of their biggest barriers that they have to cross is protein, it's food. Food is very expensive there, and there's not a lot of access to it for this particular population group. So bringing something that reproduces as fast as rabbits do and offers such a rich, valuable protein to that part of the world, it really is a game changer for them. And it provides also income, which is huge. It's it's just kind of a gift that keeps on going.
Yeah, so are you taking the animals with you?
No, we talked about that. We overnight in Johannesburg to get there, and that just it became not an option. So we've actually been able to source right now two different places that have rabbits that will be usable to start the process. We're continuing to look before we get there. There are two families that are active living missionary couples in Mozambique already. So there's a connection there that's making the process easier.
All right. So lots of poverty, lots of need, lots of HIV, and lots of orphans. It sounds like some people need some help. And
they do.
So obviously rabbits reproduce.
Quickly.
Yes.
They may even end up with another industry of things that they make with rabbit pelts. Hey, everybody loves a nice bunny rabbit, right? They're really cute, but they are also tasty, right?
They are. Yeah.
Yes, rabbit. Like chicken?
Rabbits, too.
Better.
No.
Better than chicken. Okay.
Better than chicken, man.
And have it to be reproducible and sustainable and to provide that protein source for food rather than, you know, a bag of rice that's dropped off one time. You know, that is great. How many people are going, guys?
There's a team of seven of us going.
Okay. And so you're going to be teaching.
How much are you going to need for this?
For the total cost of the trip?
Yeah.
Probably close to $28,000.
All right. So in the last couple of minutes that we have left here, give us the details of the auctions and stuff that's going on Saturday and where.
So Dallas Alliance Church, show up just before 6:30. We have a silent auction that starts then at 7 o'clock or 7:15, depending on people flow. We'll start our live auction. We have an actual auctioneer coming in. He's, you know, they speak a million words a minute and then sell the goods. When that closes, we'll get everybody their stuff. Because we are a faith-based organization, we're a 501c3, so anything that sells over retail value, it comes as a tax gift for the person buying. And the very last item up for auction is probably my favorite. We're selling these little rabbit salt and pepper shakers. They're not worth much, but what they are is a breeding trio in Africa. So it's kind of the bring the heifer, if you will. We can't bring a rabbit, but we can raise the funds specifically to do that.
Well, that's terrific. So the people who do participate can say, hey, I want to make sure we have as big as impact as possible. I can't go, but we could buy more rabbits for you guys, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So you're going to do some pastoral training. You're going to do vacation Bible school for the kids. You're going to teach them on husbandry so they know how to take care for these animals, right?
Absolutely.
And then provide some animals to start them off.
That's awesome.
I've been on a mission trip myself, and a lot of times you get the question, it's like, why didn't you spend $28,000 on rabbits? And the answer is that there's something about the human connection.
Yeah.
Right, gentlemen?
Yeah.
And a lot of times the people that go are as ministered to as the people who are being visited. So thank you. Thank you for that. Good luck with your auction.
Man, thank you guys so much.
Yep, thanks so much, guys.
All right. So that's Jared and Landon, Dallas Alliance, this Saturday at 6:30 if you want to go participate.
Dallas Alliance Church.
And go get some of those things. Yeah. Tomorrow's going to be Friday, and we're going to talk to the volcanoes again.
Yes.
And I'm going to talk. We're going to have another friend of mine who's doing something amazing in the Mid-Valley. Yet another place to go. You listen to the Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.